When did you go there, and when did you start with Sudan?
When we started with Sudan. Well, we left India 9/25. We left India, and part of the regiment went to China. There was a bit of a bust up about that time in China, so they went to the international settlement. That's where the travel was. And of course, other countries sent their troops there as well. So part of our regiment went, who had the longest time to serve. Myself and a few more, well, the rest of them who didn't have all that time, we were supposed to be homeward bound. Well, we boarded it. We sailed from Karachi. And we stopped at Port Sudan. And up to now we went to Khartoum by a train. It was a rather long thing, take about a month to get there. Well, that's what it seemed like to us. It takes about a week, I reckon.
It was 1927.
About this time, before that. No, just before that. But it was after 1925, between 1925 and 27. And, of course, we went up to Khartoum. We took over all the regiment up there at the time. We went into the old Egyptian barracks. We just saw a load of mud huts, you know, with a so-called winter stuck up in here. And, everything was in. Antiquated, well, where the only bit of grass we had was outside the company office. And that was only a bit of a show, it was only about as big as a normal English backyard, so to speak. And we settled there on the other side of the bridge, because there was a new British new barracks and Carton University, you know, Gordon's College. On the other side of the river, and they used to have a football pitch there, and they used to allot it to the different companies like our regiment, and the Queens were there when we were there. When we went, they got bribed there. And of course, there was a lot of football pitch to one and all the other of us, and there used to be plenty of fights because they got the idea that my mob was a load of Swedenor, as they called us. And all of them come from London. We wouldn't get many Swedenors come from Bowen Stratford like me, and there was about four of us from Marcus Street, West End. And loads of the others come from London, like different places, all around Walton Green, into Manhattan, Hoxton, and different places. And they was called us Swedenors. There's loads of bundles used to go on. Because finally, when they did take them out of the way, they brought the Somerset Light Infantry there, and when they took over, you know, the peace reigned, so to speak. There was no more brawls and fights and butts up like there was then. And while I was there at Khartoum, because they used to get me when time had come round in Portland, don't know whether they thought I was the only bloke that could do the job as guard commander, best come and pick me up. Well, I mean, I didn't care something for generals or anybody else. I knew I could do my job, and that's all there was in it. So they used to come and put me on guard, like when the general came, they paid a general salute, like, and present arms. And he might ask you a few words about how things were, you know, or he might not. Because you had to step forward and salute him, like, and conduct him around the ranks of the guard, so as he can have a so-called inspection. Well, it differed from India, because he stuck out there all the day. The sweat was pouring from him while he stood out there waiting, say, on Proclamation Day or the Queen's or King's birthdays. And we used to get tons of these. You get up about 3 o'clock in the morning and get the stuff, get yourself ready. And then they'd take you out one or two places. We had to go a little bit farther out, so we went by train. This is in India. And of course we would bake with everything, yes. When we got there, the sweat used to pour over me. I couldn't see out of my eyes for the sweat. Soaking wet all your shirt, there's to soak through your braces. We had braces at one time. And used to soak through them until they'd done away with. We had two sets of equipment. We had a webbing set, and we had a set of equipment for proclamations and all ceremonial drills. That's what that was, sort of thing, you know. You wait for the general, you know, he comes around when he thinks he will, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, accompanied by all his gang, you know, his retinue all galloping up behind. And our colonel, his name, he didn't care taps for any of them. He didn't. He used to carry on the army the way we was kept their way while they galloped round. So, and they didn't even look at you. It just took about 10 seconds flat for them to chase behind their horses, you know, and gallop the quickest way to the officer's mess where they go down and gulp with whiskey down in there. What they call chowder pigs. Chowder pigs with biggins, and barrel pigs with biggins, and chowder pigs with little ones, whiskey. There they go, never seen no more of them. And of course, we were dismissed, then we got back to barracks and didn't have a dive under the shower like get yourself cooled down, because we had showers and that at lower containments where we were then. And of course, when we were law, we used to change over, like go to the fort for a spell and get transferred there, go to new barracks. Well, in the new barracks, you know, they said new barracks, they always had pains and all the rest of it. But in the bungalows at containments of Khartoum, where the main bulk of the regiment was, headquarters, you might say. Of course, the bungalows were long bungalows, and they used a punker, still had the punkers, like the bloke sat up in the corner and worked it up and had a string tied around his toe. And he used to keep it going all day and all night, they had to change up. Of course, in the night, he used to get tired and go to sleep. But as soon as he'd shut, that punker stopped. So the air was so oppressive that you would swimming in that bed, of course, it woke you up. The shower boots went over the corner, and it's just bunkers used to go like a herd of clappers, you know, and like someone trying to, like the air trying to run away from something. But anyway, at the new barracks, I'll say we had these thickety bobs. Now, there's one thing I can remember from about that, because what brings back to mind, I don't know whether it was 1923 or 24. Cardiff City played the Arsenal in a cup final, and the papers not very long ago they came out referring to past cup winners, and they said Ferguson, the centre forward who scored the goal, was an Irishman. Well, I remember the headings, the papers just come out to us, they were a bit late, but we used to get them, these were world people, you know. But, and I bought a paper, I'm not sure now whether it's the News of the World or the People. And the headlines on that particular paper this day was, Scotsman scores the goal that takes the English Cup to Wales. Now that's the exact wording on that paper, the headline. Scotsman scores the goal, and I heard about calling him an Irishman on here. And I can definitely state that it was a Scotsman scores the goal, Ferguson. Scotsman scores a goal that takes the English Cup to Wales. Mm. It was a Welsh team that won it, and the Scotsman scored the goal. Of course, it was the Arsenal player. There was a bit of an argument about the goal, whether it was out, whether it wasn't. But anyway, that was the one. I always remembered that, when you had brought it on here about.
How long were you in the Sudan?
Well, roughly about 2 years. Near enough.
Did he stay basically in one place?
No, we got to Khartoum and we had two stations. One was at El Abeid, farther up, and one you backtracked a bit to a place called Atbara. That's where the blue and white and there's the three Niles meet, the Black Nile, they all meet, it's a meeting place where they all fuse in together. And of course, at Khartoum, the Nile was a mile wide over that bridge, and with a run up, it was a bit farther than that to walk over it. Of course, you imagine we used to walk from our place to the football mess, you came back afterwards. But from Khartoum, you pop over the bridge, like, then go into Omdurman, that was the ivory market of the world, you know, you could buy it. Well, they used to carve it up and that, and the Camel Corps was stationed there as well. And also, after a while, we played football one day. We played a other competition of their own, and of course the students used to play, and we used to play anybody. Cup at El Abeid Town. I told you about El Abeid Town, didn't I? I told you, well, we ain't got there yet. But we went up to where I've been. Well, it's about, used to be a barrier, like a ring, of about a dozen barriers of barbed wire and rings. You know, and a shovelled in freeze, that's like a knife rest, used to shut the opening up for night time. And open me up in the morning. So it retrieved me valley. So you say nobody was allowed in or out between retreat and revalley. So you have a night time the rest would go in, revalley in the morning before. And also there was welds outside, and we had block housing machine guns trained on the weld. So all the natives from round about, they used to come to these wells to get their water, see? But nobody was allowed there after dark. So they knew at the same time as it was revalley when it started to get light. So they was allowed there. And of course after that, when it got dark, there's nobody there. And of course we had Victor's machine guns in like block houses, but our water was in there incidentally. Inside this kind of a block house, not only would you have the guns covering these wells, elevated, we also had our own water in there, you know, because the place was, well, it's wooden huts and old oil lamps, you know, well, in the dark ages it was there. Of course, there's nobody lived anywhere, just you go, all it was sand for miles and miles around, Sahara Desert, I tell you. And I know if there was any other places around here, I never heard of them. And of course, going back to Carlton, you never see anything. It's just, you said about one train a week bringing up stuff. And it's a bike in there, well, they must have got it out of a salt mine, they must have dug it up. Because you could soak it for about 3 months and then you couldn't eat it. It was still salty. Yeah. Never had any butter.
I remember you telling me a story about crocodiles. Let's go. I can't remember, dropping stones in the water or throwing mill bombs in at them or something. Was that, can you, do you know what I mean? Can you remember?
What was that?
I can't remember.
As we was coming up, just of course, farther down, you know, there are forests, but there was nowhere where we were. We come through forests and that, but we followed the river up, like through. The train could only get so far. It used to go by boat mostly.
Yeah.
See, when I went down to take a prisoner to the Citadel in Cairo. You know, that's where the prisoners, you know, they get anything, they take them down here. It was me and another bloke. We went down, I think we stopped at the cataracts. Yes, well, our dam is there now. I think they've taken that place there. But then we started conducting to the, you know, thing we bought. A couple of nights there, we come back up to where we are. But most of my adventures was up this way. Well, of course, in it, because they used to have there was no butter, no milk, nothing that, no cheese. Well, I mean, chickens and cows can't live on sand, can they? There was no farms around here, not for hundreds of miles, maybe thousands, because it's a tremendous stretch, about 40 times the size of this country, isn't it? The Sudan. It's quite a size. Well, because we had the old wooden lamps, and we used to sleep in the middle of the bungalow, and the bungalow was like a concrete trench. And you had your bed down here, and you had all your accoutrements and that. And then you had that one a bank, and you could rest, take the rest of your arms on the concrete bank, like the side of the trench, on the front of it. And there's the great big windows, always open, they were, never shut them, because it was too hot. So if you heard the alarm or anything, you just fold out of bed and your rifle was there and he was already in the trench, already there. Perform if they started to get the idea that they didn't like you.
Was that indoors though?
Yes, it's all enclosed in the back room. See, if you was in the back room, it was your living quarters. And of course we had a mess room outside over the road somewhere. And I told you about the chickens, you know, and the barley with the bloke in there said, a crate of chicken, the Sheik of Alabine.
Yeah.
They'll tell you about him in all these forests. Mm-hmm. Tell you about when we played on football and the bloke said, He kept booting me on the ankle, so I said, oi, said the idea is to kick a ball. I said, not me. So he said, what matter if I kick you and the ref no see? So I said, oh, so-and-so, kick you and the ref no see. So anyway, about a little while afterwards, I get the opportunity. He'd get my ankles black and blue, oh, he'd done with it. Well, all right, done with it, I nearly killed him. I'd done about 40 miles an hour over about 20 yards, I suppose, sailing feet first. Well, the referee nearly blew the pee out of his whistle. He said it was a foul, but I didn't believe him.
Tell him stories about when you used to try to hunt for the tigers and they used to try.
That's in India.
I told him all that. I'm sorry, Jim.
Well, you used to go on what they call shooting leaves.
You told him that.
And there was no tiger that where I was, not in the, it was out down south, the Mysore, Bangalore and places like that. And he was attached to the regiment that was occupying that particular place, see. If you have a shooting leave, you couldn't come home here.
Yeah, you're talking about India now, though, not...
Yeah.
He wants to hear about the Sudan.
Oh, well, they're getting on with the Sudan. So, at this particular place, well, we were stuck there. It was a morbid sort of place. There's nothing to do. Don't even read. Or go to the library. We had a pretty good library. And, you know, books and that. And, of course, we used to make our contents of our own. See, you know, and we had a camel call here one day. Took us out for a ride. So of course we got on the camels and where we went, I had one, a wall-eyed one, you know, he wouldn't go no faster than he thought he would. So there was a bit of a race going on and I was last. And the way of your camels was not what I show you on the pictures. To get them down, I used to go shh, shh. Of course he used to shush and lay down a bit so he could get on. But the way to get off was to jump off, and he didn't do no shushing to get you off. He just simply slid over. Well, we got on this race, and we, you know, how you're going on, Donoghue, and the other bloke was whatever he was, some old time jockeys, you know, Fred Archer. So we goes charging along on his blip camel. And of course, different villages we dropped in, they were very sociable, these. And just all the villages, like, you know, with people walking about with pretty with nothing on them, because it was terrifically hot. But they give us a goat at one place, and so we're supposed to cook it, like, and have a bit of a bust.
You
so
told us
that.
It's up. Yeah, it's right, good,
no? Anyway, they tied it on the camel.
Yeah.
See? Like, give it to the next village going down.
You said it can go away at the next village.
Yeah. That's right, but we got down again.
Where is it that you were as librarian?
Oh, I was librarian in, correct, in Lahore.
Okay.
Yeah, I used to be the billiard marker as well.
Yeah,
I was my own little place.
Yeah, okay.
Didn't I tell you that?
I think you are. Can you remember when you left Sudan?
Yeah, it was 1927, around about that time. Yeah, it was.
And where did you go from?
We come up the channel on New Year's Day. So it would be in 1927. New Year's Day, we come up the channel, and I've blown a gale. But it wouldn't be, it's not a description of it. Ah, ship was doing everything by sink. You know, I sat right up the top of the lifebelt box, and first the front goes down as if it ain't never going to come up, you know, and then it starts to shudder its way up and up it comes, you know, and it's stuck up in the air about here, and round the back, that's nearly out of that side. But I didn't mind that so much, pitching, but when they started to roll, this thing, it was the New Railia, I think we came home on, because they had the bevy line. New Railia, the ship. We went out on an old, very old ship called the Syria. It took about 6 weeks in mucking around, you know, because they had to call it all the ports where troops were. Setting down troops and picking up troops from there who were going to somewhere else. Like you pick some up, say, at the first port. Say you stop at Aden or where it may be, or we stopped the first one, I can't remember that one.
Where did you actually get on the ship?
We boarded it. Where did we board? We got on a port of the day, just the same, and we came back. Of course, we came from Karachi when we came from India, and straight across to the Red Sea, to the ports on the Red Sea, it was. That's they shifted it.
And did you come back then to serve in England?
Yeah, but the closest one. We landed in Southampton, and I'll always remember this. This was in 1928, something, run about it, so. And some of the old dears out there, they give us a bag of, had a bar of chocolate and a pack of fags, box of messes, that and orange, because we thought we was on a good thing, and thought we'd give a treat, and it's like, welcome us home. Well, we got a cold shiller, charged a shilling, stopped us a shilling, out of our paper, it's like, and why the one had them on, we don't know, and I suppose the others would either. No. Anyway, there was no thing with Bob, there was no break, you know, the line was straight through to Colchester. And of course, I was grieving, and of course, mother lived at Stratford, Western Street. Mm-hmm. And I got ideas of getting all home. Anyway, we sailed through, but we got a month's leave after we come home, when we come home from there. And Colchester well, was a pretty run-of-the-mill sort of thing, you know, you've done parades and all sorts of coaches you should get up to. Me and the Sergeant Major, we was always at loggerheads. Mayo, his name was, an old campaigner, you know, he fought in the Zulu Wars as well as the Boer War, he worked. I think he must have been the Battle of Waterloo and all the medals he had. But it wasn't very, what shall I say? He was a good soldier, Jim, but the point is that half of the soldiers, they'd been in the 1948 war and they could hardly read all right, a lot of them. They couldn't see when it came to putting up a detail. Well, I mean, it's no great bragging on my part to say that I was far better educated than a lot of those were. See, it wasn't their fault, it was just the thing. And my education only came through travelling around and reading books out of the library. Well, because when we first got to India, they were sitting for their second class certificate. Well, it made a difference because you got 2 and 9 a day. After 2 years, you got extra 9, which made it in the magnificent summer 3 and 6. And if you got a first class shot and a second class certificate of education, you got another tanner. So, of course, when I first got law, of course, all the blokes come running out, like gone out before you. I was left from Ireland, we come out from Ireland. And we went home first to draw.
You're going back to Lahore now. You said about getting a certificate and so on before.
Did I?
Yeah, I wanted to go on to when you got back to England. Move on to that.
Well, we went to Colchester then. We were chasing up with Colchester. Till I come out, it was about 1929, I suppose. But then. And I went on a reserve. But, well, that was pretty well, you know, drills and all sorts of things. Me and the Sergeant Major, we hated one another. Well, we didn't exactly hate one another. We was loggerheads, mate.
Were you a sergeant then, or were you a corporal?
I was a corporal then. I've been when I went on a PT course at Shorncliffe, there was 2 of us went, because they all sent 2, in case one failed. So, well, the other bloke did, same name, Tucker Brown. Of course, then they go on to, we pass out there, and they go on to the advanced course at Aldershot, see? Well, when it was the winter courses, was when I went there, one of the things they were training in was swimming. You had to break the ice on that river, getting that water. Many coming from places where I'd been, but this lot, but we had a special grub, we used to have cooks that cook our food, you know, and we needed it and all. 9 o'clock in the morning till 5 o'clock at night in the gym, climbing up ropes and looping up bars and coping around with fronts and backs.
When was this?
When I came home.
So
this is 9.
You became a PTI when you came back?
Yeah, I went to a PT. No, it wasn't a PTI, I was abroad. I was made up in Lars Gall in the Sudan. No, I was made up last quarter in India, Karachi.
Yeah.
Because when I come in for a football match, there was a note on my bed. It's early serve, appointed unpaid last quarter from now. Get the strike one by tomorrow.
When would you have started, don't they?
Hey?
When
would you have been? Long ago, that was. But,
when were you
now, we had a bit of an argument. With an, I had an argument with another bloke, and there was a... took one strike away from me. They had a bit of a court-martial. And, I took one strike away from me. This was... oh, before, yeah, before when I come home, this was. And we had a bit of a bust, haven't we, and this other bloke.
No, so you were made a sergeant in England?
I was in the wrong, I clocked him.
Well, yeah. You want to know where you was made a sergeant?
In England, yes. Yeah. Well, the point is, when I went on my first PT course, I went as a corporal, and when I come back, I'd been made up sick. So, I come home as a Lance Corporal, and I was appointed full corporal. Well, I say I got my first strike, but when I come home on a boat, when I went to the Sudan, I was Lance Corporal. See? Because as I told you, then I made up corporal, that's right. But I went to the Sudan, I was made up as corporal. Because I used to take the guard. You know, they said, oh, it's come and fish me out. I used to, of course, it's just the same. When I was a PTI, if the general was coming round, I was in the mess room. They wanted someone in the mess room. Like, there's a chap putting all the duff up and ball, like the grub was lousy. But lousy was lousy. And there's a chap all over the floor and up the wall. So they asked me, they wanted to know where I was going to finish. See? But to get back before that, when I used to go on a run, I used to get about 10th in the battalion, you know. When I had a battalion run, there was several hundred men on that, so it wasn't bad. Even my arch enemy used to serve, well done, he served, you know, because he was a, you know, well, they take a pride in their country, what they call it, spread the core. See, but he could always pick on me. I say on the march there, some poor sod, they were staggering along there, like the drunken man carrying a Lewis gun, and I was like, guess that, I'll have a go at that. And he said, what are you doing with that gun? I said, well, look, you can't carry it. I said, oh, you fall out and fall over in a minute. So he said, what have you done? She had to, he said, give it to him back. So he said, because I had to give it to him back. So that's a bright old turn out. But of course, in other times when he used to call me, like, he used to be, I was all this old. When I used to get back, he'd get his own back on me. When I used to get back of a, say, Sunday night late, strike the match and have a look at the details, see what you're on. All the sergeant for the ensuing week. Me. See?
Yeah.
Corporal sir.
Yeah. What I want to do is get on to England and sort out when you were now made a sergeant and when you went on the PTI course and so on.
Yeah, I was a corporal when I went on the PTI course. See?
Okay, so you were a corporal when you came back. How soon after that did you go on the course?
Well, when I come home, well, practically the first, this was 1928. Well, it would be, that's right, it would be in 1928. And, of course, when we landed there, when we stuck out there, we all went on leave, and when we come back again, they picked out two blokes, but I used to play football, hockey, and all sorts of cricket. Have a go at anything, because they are cricket, you enjoyed it. That's why I say now, people watch. When what they should be doing if they're young and able is playing it, not watching it. You get more joy.
Keep him one trick, can you?
So you get more joy out of doing it. When you do see some old crab out there performing, well, if he can do it, it's something new. I would say, well, what are you going to do? I can do. If I can't, then I don't do it right. I'm going to try.
Did you volunteer to go on the PTI? Or were you?
No, they picked me out. No, I didn't volunteer. I only had a sergeant major. Said, send two people away. He said to Shawcliffe first. He said, then order shot if you're lucky. He said, for PT instructor. So he said, you're one. He said, and Corporal Brown's another. So the purpose, we went down to the place where we started to it, started from, to go to India. So he's gone right round the circle now. The Manchester Regiment was stationed here. And I often had wondered why I never went and inquired whether one of my family was here, because there was an aunt, she had about four or five boys. Two was sunk in the, two went down with a Wolverine in the Channel in the last war. So there must have been some of my own family in that Manchester Regiment, because although the girls married, I knew their name was Pickup, Cummings and Leach, was a common name.
How long was the course?
All 6 months, the first one. Oh, it really crippled you. Killed you.
What sort of thing did they do?
What sort of things? Well, you jumped over horses, you climbed up a 40-foot rope with your legs, and then after that you climbed up with no legs. You had to pull yourself up by your arms and come down again, showing the position of attention, you know. Body erect, eyes looking your own eye, with your chest stuck out and your legs together straight, no bundles of rags, you know, come down this. All went up. And same, you went over also, you get all the back somersaults. That means to say you've got your chest out and your back pulled in. Looking your head, looking your own eye, so you still
like what the gymnasts do now, aren't they?
Like
what them gymnastics on
here? Yeah, it's the same as what they do there, but they're far advanced into what us, because they've had time to learn more. Don't think you'll say build up on them. But they've got specialist ideas there. But ours was all round. Not only was we PTIs, we was also instructors as regarding running a sports meeting. See, that was part of our job. We run a sports meeting. But we've got to know where to put the different places so they don't, one event don't interfere with another. You don't put the ammo where a boat's running round. Right, stop. See, do you? Or somebody's throwing the javelin or the discus or putting the shot. Well, the same bit with the jumpers is there, and over there is something else, you know, you place it all out. It's all in my book, this. See how to run a sports meeting. And of course you get everything sorted out. And that's only part of your job. The other part was the physiology and anatomy, as I told you. You've got to know parts of your body, because you've got to know what benefit this so-called exercise is having on particular muscles in the body. You see, wherever it might be, you see, where you get muscles up here by cups and saucers, you've got to get what they call harmonious development. That's to say that the whole body's got to advance together. Not like in the bad old days when you used to have instructors, like the bloke I told you about, 6 foot nothing, a Sergeant Major Botel. He said that when I was at the depot, this was, he said, who wants to learn to box? I said, I don't mind. I said, I'll have a go. Well, me and my 8 stone 6, I think something like that was, crawled in there, and he's about 13, 14. He didn't teach me anything, he just started to knock me about and show how clever he was. See, so of course, I lost my confidence in going in with blokes such as him. See, but I never lost my confidence as much as say I wasn't going to have a go another time when things were a bit more equal, see, because I never caught up to him, because... But that was the situation. He was showing how clever he was. He was showing up at my expense, because I was outnumbered on everything. The hairs in my head and all, near enough. So I never forgot that. And when I started to teach my job, I used to tell them, like, different stuff about this, that and the other. I said, if you're going to teach anybody, I said, you're not supposed to show them how clever you are. You're supposed to teach them to be as clever as what you are without them knowing that they are as clever as what you are. You see, so you've got to talk to them. And of course it depends on the character of different people you take. Like on PT, for instance, I take officers' classes. See, all of them, I mean, when they're in the gym, on a PT class, I'm in charge, not them. No matter whether they're lieutenants or captains or whatever they may be. See, I told you about one lot, and most of them was, you know, they was gentlemen enough to know that they were in the class, supposedly, to keep fit. Of course, others thought, well, they'd do it if they thought they would, and if they didn't think they would, they wouldn't do it, but they picked on the wrong one when they had me. Of course, I soon let them see who was the boss, and it wasn't them. I'll get them on a beam, for instance. it's the only one of them. And they say, you climb on a beam up, and you ain't want to be with your arms, you know. And then his arms bend, and you've got to pull yourself up so your chest touches the beam. And then lower, you let it lengthen out of it, then you pull it up again. And I kept them there at this, and I was hanging up there like a dead sheep outside a butcher's shop. You know, the bleeding eyeball was glazed, and they was. And when I sat on the feet down, they fell over there. There's nothing orderly about where I hit the floor. Of course, two or three of them was said, a good Shirley shirt, they said, but you could have been a bit kinder. But I knew why I'd done it. See, there were these officers who said this, they knew why I'd done it, because they're picking their time to take liberties of their rank over me, or just what they thought. But outside, of course, I had that salute and said, yes, a free bag's full. But in here, I was the gaffer, not them. See, well, you had several cases of that, but then you get the people going in and they're not taking any notice what you're talking about. So I said, well, I should say, well, he's come here. So stand attention, I said, when I'll call you and say, stand still attention, not a while, see. So I said, well, I'm not talking to myself, I said. So if you don't want to learn anything, I said, you can depart. You can go and report to your company sergeant, and I didn't tell them that Corporal Reserve has sent you away as not suitable. And I'll tell him why, if he wants to know why, but you can tell him that you're not suitable because you don't intend to pay attention. So therefore you're not going to learn anything. I said, I'm not going to talk to myself. I don't get paid for talking to myself. Of course, I used to chuck them out, I'd have them back out of it. And of course, I'd have a word with the sergeant major and tell him so and so. Well, I mean, he knows what I was talking, I was speaking the truth. And I told him. Now, a bloke named Nutty Holmes. Well, I had a lot to do with it.
Let's get this with it. You went on the first course, you went on a course that lasted 6 months.
Yeah, near enough.
And you came back in, you were then a PTI.
No. Oh, no. No, I'm coming to this. The first lot lasted about 3 months. Well, I come a cropper. All the bean. I come down a bus in my shoulder. Well, they put me in the hospital at Aldershot. And I got over that all right. And a couple of weeks or so afterwards, so I come to lands a bit awkward. We're doing a bit of water jump, we were doing the water jump. And you know how someone was laying in it and all the side was getting splashed out with water like it was, and it was getting very, very slippery. Mm. So I took off awkward and doing a bit of extra trying to make it, I landed awkward and I come down and they told me in the hospital that I'd fractured my foot, my left foot, in 3 places. See, well, bang went jumping, a clear jump over the horse. Well, the horse was a bit higher than that table. So it was higher than that chair. Yeah, take off of a clear jump. No help, no springboard, I mean, just jump over it. Well, that was out of question with this, because we said, well, we'll have to send you back to the regiment, sir. They said, we're sorry about it, but I tried to get out of the hospital because when the doctor came around, you know, I couldn't feel it all that much. So I said, I feel all right, sir. He said, how are you this morning? I said, I'm all right. I said, I feel all right. I said, you got to go out. So he said, I said, if you think you can go out. He said, anyway, we'll have over x-ray, you know, they didn't take x-ray right at all. Took x-ray. Next morning came around, he said, are you trying to get me to sack? It's what the doctor said to me. So I said, no, sir, why? He said, well, he said, we find out it's your foot's fractured in 3 places. So they sent me back to the regiment. Well, when the next turn come up, they get sent 2 more, because they always send some more, like to take the place of the people as they leave. They picked me and I went back on the course. Well, that's where I passed out, on that course, same sort of thing. And, because in the course it was climbing on a shelf. Now, you wouldn't think that was hard. Yeah, don't do it on there. You try climbing on a shelf about that lot. and you've got to jump up onto the shelf, and you've got to get on that shelf, it's stuck to the wall, you know, and the only way you can get on is to try and get your elbow on, and the other one, and sort of push yourself up where you've got nothing to hang on to. And that's one of the hardest practices. We used to do a ropes, two ropes, one here, one there. It's a 40-foot climb to the top of the gym. See, now you start with one arm and then the other arm. But when you start climbing, you pull yourself up on a single rope and you put one leg round the other and then you watch your feet up. Like, so I'll come to that position. See? And I'll put my arm up, grab it, and then grab that, and I'll bring my feet up. See? And I'll grab a bit more, and that's how you go up. See? But coming down, of course, it's, you come down the same way. But when you get up the top, you're on two, you've got, I'll show the position of attention, you know, you've got straight up like this. And coming down, you do the same, and he's watching, and you get marks for all this. And coming down, and you go wrestling, do that. Wrestling, teach you Westmoreland and Cumberland style, and then catch a can. And we said different people like, who were champ boxing, who were champions at this particular art, or wherever it was they were at, you know, champion boxers. We had, he was at McCracken, for instance, the actor. He was one of the finest heavyweights in the world. But he wasn't a professional. He was acting pictures. He wasn't a professional boxer, but he was as good as any, for one. And we also have all the other, you know, the leading lights of the different, like wrestling and boxing and swimming and all. They all come down and give you a lecture. You know, you sit round and they give you our tips and that. Of course, you benefit from all this. For instance, he said he used to say at the top of the gym, "Seest thou old man wise in his own conceit? There's more hope of a fool than of him." I do remember this now, it's 60 years ago, Mark. I've been coming up for 60 years, I remember what I said over the top of the gym. Like that in there. If you think you can, if you think you can't, it's almost certain that you won't. Because you believe that you can try it. If you think you can't, you get your lick from a bleak start. Well, that was another part they said in there. Is that swimming? Of course, you teach the blokes on a form of swimming. So you do the breaststroke and different strokes. There's all the diagrams in the book. But you can teach swimming on land. You know, it's just like a frog going along, you see. But you use your legs and your arms. Mm. So, of course, when you get in the water, when you're diving, like you've got a bloke, say, for instance, you're on the eyeball, he's diving. See, what he does, he's apt to flop off, you know, but you've got to stand like that, or he has, and you just put your hand on him and say, well, now don't you push forward, you just fall straight, and you keep your arm on him like this, so he falls straight, and of course when he turned over, he was practically upright, and his arms were hard to go down, you know, near enough like an arrow, see. Well, take most people on a springboard, eh?
Yeah, okay, we don't want to get into the details of all the different things. You went through the course a second time.
Yeah.
Last bit.
And I come back.
Yeah.
And, the normal run I do is I was down at the gym for a while, like down there taking different courses, because we had about half a dozen regiments there. Mm. And I used to come in for half hour, you know, PT every day. All the different companies and all the rest of them. Well, when they know I was coming out...
You would teach all the different companies and different regiments?
Different regiments, yeah. Mm. See, there was a communal gym, you know, sort of thing. Mm. And when they know I was coming out, I was in... I joined my own regiments in Sir Brian Barracks, right up again. And I used to take the boys in the regiment outside on the playing field, because we had a football pitch and all sorts of things outside. Used to take them out there, and the worst kind of sons to take is boys, band boys, because you can't stick them in the nick like you can men. Mm-hmm. You put them in a guardhouse, you run them down a nick, but with kids, 12, 13, 14 band boys, they come from Nether Hall, they were musicians, but they were in the band, come from Nether Hall, but they come from either, but most of them as orphans, come from such as, I the Hibernian School or the Duke of York's.
Yeah.
But the Hibernian School was a military academy for the sons of, you know, people who've been killed in the last during the war, see, and those orphans. Well, they had a place over here, the Duke of York's. Well, that's where they all come from. Well, you think that they disciplined them. But maybe they had, because once they got to a regiment, they was a bit more free than what they would be in these homes. Like, you know, I never let Bart work hard, because I was enough of them. And, of course, you had a bit of a job with him, you see, but you had to give them a sort of kid stakes. So you'd say, well, I used to say, well, come around, go around, I ain't going to bite. Come on, I'll show you something now. I said, you see that lot over there? Took round and see a company going along there, the men mostly, but they were doing this stuff, a smile of paint, you know. And I'll say, that lot over there, I said, if you, first of all, I'm going to tell you this, I said. If you don't want to learn anything, I said, you don't take any notes of me, I said. You just do as you like, I said. And that is also what I like, I said. That is to just dismiss and go back to your company, I said, because I don't know anything to do with it. I don't expect to stay in the heart of you, I said, talk to myself. I said, but if you want to learn anything, I said, you'll pay attention to me. See them over there, I said. They've been at it quite a while, I said, but with about 3 or 4 weeks, I said, we're not supposed to talk to them. See, I was paying it to their ego, you see. There's nothing like a kid thinks he's going to, you know, beat up me or whatever it is. And they wasn't bad either, the time I got through with them. When I saw that, because you go out the front, but you demonstrate, but you don't teach them like hand springs and front somersaults and back somersaults. You only teach them, I've still got my drill book, you just teach them all the exercises like arms, swinging your arms around and in and out, and jumping up and down, and you know, different things like just to keep them fit. The idea is to get them fit so they march along, you know. Mm-hmm.